and welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on a Wednesday morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget, you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website, nickcraig.com. Want to thank the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support of the show. You can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. More details on them later on in the program this morning. Well, another one bites the dust at a UNC institution. If you remember back last week, I played a video from an entity called Accuracy in Media, in which they spoke to somebody at UNC Charlotte, which is one of the University of North Carolina system schools across the state, where that individual talked about finessing. That was the word of the year that they used, and using covert operations to continue diversity, equity, and inclusion within the UNC system. Now, why is any of this relevant? Well, you go back just a couple of years and you had the UNC Board of Governors just last year vote on a policy to remove diversity, equity, and inclusion from the UNC system. Now, the way that this works is you've got all of these UNC schools like UNC Charlotte, you've got UNC Wilmington, you've got Chapel Hill, NC State, all of these UNC system schools. They have a board of trustees at the state level. That state level sets edicts and standards that trickle down to all of the various institutions. Each institution has a chancellor and its own local board of trustees. But at the top of the level, you've got this board of trustees at the state that sets standards and sets policy for the entirety of the UNC system. The policy changed last year to revoke DEI and get back to institutional neutrality, where we are no longer looking at individuals based on their sex, based on the color of their skin, based on their ethnic background. We're no longer looking at those things. The idea that we ever were is absurd in the first place, but the UNC board said this stuff is ridiculous. You know, I'll remind you that UNC Chapel Hill was struck down by the United States Supreme Court over racist admission standards. I mean, they were absolutely, according to the United States Supreme Court, using race as part of their admissions, which is illegal. You can't do that. It is inherently discriminatory. And that's really the whole rap here with DEI. It's masqueraded in this great acronym, DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Great acronym. Everybody loves talking about it on the left. They think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread that's existed. But inherently, baked into DEI are incredibly, in many cases, incredibly discriminatory standards. Now, the phrase DEI inherently is not discriminatory, but the individuals that have taken up this charge, the individuals that have been put in positions of power to roll out DEI, to enforce DEI, whether we're talking about a private company or a public institution like a UNC school, those individuals are far left progressive radicals. They are absolutely radical in their beliefs and their thoughts, and they have used the avenue of DEI to push forward incredibly discriminatory standards, policies, and practices. That has been obvious and evident for many years now. It's not unique to North Carolina. It is a countrywide issue. We've all seen it unfold on social media. We've all watched this unfold right in front of our very eyes. We've seen the kind of disgusting and hateful rhetoric that comes out of so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion. Over the last couple of years, it's been kind of a growing trend. We've seen various public and private institutions begin the process of rolling back DEI. Not because diversity is bad, not because equity is bad, and not because inclusion is bad. Those are inherently good things, things that everybody strives for, but because that's not what's been going on within DEI departments across the country. That's just not been the case. What you've seen is a group of radical progressive leftists weaponize DEI to fit a political agenda. In the case of UNC Chapel Hill, you had the use of DEI as the justification for racist admission standards. That was ruled by the United States Supreme Court. So last week, we talked about UNC Charlotte and an undercover report from Accuracy in Media uncovering that even though that standard had changed, even though all UNC systems were ordered to get rid of their DEI departments, to stop diversity, equity, and inclusion programs, that the people that were in charge of those programs, well, they didn't go anywhere. The people that were in charge of those programs just had their nameplates changed on the door. They just had their email signatures changed. So they're no longer in the DEI department. They're no longer the chief equity officer, whatever stupid title they had. However, they are still pushing the same narrative. They are still pushing the same agenda. So last week it was UNC Charlotte. This morning it is UNC Asheville with the Dean of Students, Megan Pugh, who is the center of this new Accuracy in Media report. As we played it and covered that last week, the reporter for Accuracy in Media made the point that they had six other UNC schools that they were going to expose. And this morning it is UNC Asheville. I will admit the audio is not necessarily the best quality in this. There's captions on the video. So for all of you audio listeners, I apologize for the less than superb audio, but I want to go through this because I think it's very interesting. Here is the Accuracy in Media report that ran yesterday afternoon.
I'm so glad that you really were so good stuff.
I mean, we probably
still do
anyway, but
you can really
keep it.
This is Megan Pugh. She's the Dean of Students at UNC Asheville. She recently told our hidden camera investigator that she loves breaking rules. One of those rules, of course, is the Board of Regents ban on DEI from the university system in North Carolina. She bragged extensively about how she loves to break rules. She just didn't realize that she was bragging to an Accuracy in Media investigator.
I love breaking rules.
This is great. Is that why y'all kind of like spread it out and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
no. So.
Oh, okay.
Well, yes and no. Part of it is that. Part of it is just we don't have a dedicated office for it anymore. It's easier to maintain.
I'm breaking rules. I'm giving it.
You know. Until our list. They have enough.
I love that. I love that. Is like the school been supportive of y'all keeping that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I used to do their implicit bias training for Georgia. Is that something y'all are interested
in? Sure.
Like, have y'all been able to do that still?
Yeah, we have not had it since the spring.
Gotcha.
I do think, if I'm remembering correctly, I do think that the sort of guidance from the system office has been very consistent. My hope and my intention is that we can still incorporate those things, like even sort of under a broader banner of like something. I guess we'll see where it fits, but I try to include those things whenever I can.
This is in like science Yeah, exactly.
Imagine being a North Carolina taxpayer knowing that you're paying for all of this radical nonsense, paying for the latest issue of The Advocate with the radical feminist on the cover. This is what your tax dollars pay for if you're a North Carolina resident. Well, if you enjoyed this video, make sure to follow us on Facebook.
So that, again, that's the latest from Accuracy in Media. Again, apologies, the audio quality is less than ideal. Hidden camera report. But what you heard from the UNC Dean of Students, Megan Pugh, is that she loves breaking the rules. Talked about how she's got to keep it quiet. Talked about keeping things on the down low, flying under the radar. Very similar to what we heard out of UNC Charlotte. And this is the playbook that the left is taking. They have been told that you are no longer allowed to do this. You have been told that these institutions have been told you are no longer allowed to include DEI as a department. However, this in this case, it's the dean of students. I would argue that's a relatively high up position within UNC Asheville, is continuing to push this narrative forward. Continuing to push diversity, equity, and inclusion. You heard it towards the end of her comment. She's like, oh, well, I like to put it in and make sure that it fits somewhere. And so that's the problem. Now, Asheville has responded to this similar to the UNC Charlotte, according to AP Dillon, who broke this last night. She wrote, UNC Asheville, or this is the statement from UNC Asheville. UNC Asheville is aware of a video in which an employee makes comments implying that the university does not comply with the UNC system policies or legal requirements and supports employees disregarding such obligations. These remarks do not represent the practices of UNC Asheville. The university remains firmly committed to upholding all UNC system policies as well as all federal and state laws, both in principle and in practice. UNC Asheville takes these comments seriously. Following a prompt review of the matter, the individual is no longer employed by the university. The university will take a comprehensive review to reinforce expectations and ensure that all employees are aligned with applicable laws and policies. So within the span of a week, you've had two people fired at various UNC schools, Charlotte and Asheville, over their unwillingness to follow guidelines and policies set forward by the UNC system. By the Board of Governors, the Board of Trustees, that is overlooking the entire UNC system. And I mentioned this last week, and I feel the need to mention it again. I am not a fan of life ruination. I am not a fan of cancel culture and going after people's jobs and saying, oh, they need to be fired, they need this, they need that. That's not the way in which I try to promote things. I think it's mutually destructive on both sides. But the point I made last week, I'm going to reiterate again this morning. Outside of terminating these individuals, I don't know what the solution is. Megan Pugh, who was formerly the director of Multicultural Student Affairs, which was under the Diversity and Equity and Inclusion Department within UNC Asheville, continues within that institution. She has obviously made it clear, based on the undercover video brought forth by Accuracy in Media, that she is unwilling to do her job without pushing DEI. That she is unwilling to uphold the standards set forward by the UNC system in her job. And so when you've got somebody that is unwilling to do that, I don't know of another solution, unfortunately, besides them losing their jobs. They've already been directed they should not be doing this. They know. In this case, both of the people that have been under these undercover recordings by Accuracy and Media, both of them have admitted that they're not, that they know they're not supposed to be doing this. You can't plead ignorance. You can't plead, oh, I wasn't clear, the rule was ambiguous, there was a gray area. Both of these individuals are clearly stating that they are breaking the rules and doing it knowingly. And so when you've got an employee of the state, I'll note, right, we are not talking about a private school. We are not talking about a private entity that is allowed to operate in any manner that it wants. We are talking about a taxpayer-funded university system. And when you have employees in a taxpayer-funded system that refuse to follow the rules and procedures and guidelines set out, they need to be fired. It's really that simple. It's not life ruination. It's not cancel culture. You're not following the procedures put in place by your employer, which in this case is the citizens of North Carolina. The Board of Trustees sets the policy. You and I, taxpayers across the state, pay our state income tax every year. We pay our sales tax every time we go to the store. We are funding the UNC system at the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars a year. And so if you're going to blatantly ignore and blatantly disregard those policies, you're going to get fired. I don't know what other solution or what other possible explanation you can expect. Obviously, these people are not going to stop. Obviously, these folks that are wrapped up and intertwined in DEI are unwilling to put it to rest and get on with their job. They're unwilling to do that. They're going to continue to force feed DEI under a different name and under different departments to students across the UNC system. So what is the solution besides them losing their jobs? What is it? I have yet to see anybody lay out what you do. You suspend them, put them on administrative leave. They're obviously going to continue to do it because once again, they are radical ideologues. These are far left progressive activists that are in positions of power throughout the UNC system. And that's no surprise. You've seen what's going on in so-called higher education over the last couple of years. It's really been exposed and brought to the forefront. This is not surprising. This is not shocking at all. And just to kind of show you the radical nature of this individual, here's the same person, Megan Pugh, from 2021 when she was the director of Multicultural Student Affairs. This was a Zoom meeting that she held.
But before we get started and I formally introduce our guest, I'd like to honor those lost to white supremacist violence, names and stories known and unknown, with a moment of silence. So we will begin now. Thank you. When we started this,
To honor those lost to white supremacist violence, what the hell? What is that? What does that mean? What is she talking about? That's the individual that had been elevated to the position within UNC Asheville as the dean of students, a very high up position within the UNC school system. And so, what is the solution? What else do you do besides, unfortunately, having these people lose their positions? What do you do? The answer is they have to be terminated. They have to be removed from their posts because they are unwilling to adopt to the change in culture. Politics is a straight line. It really is. And the pulse of the country, the way things move, it shifts on this line constantly. It goes to the left sometimes, it goes to the right sometimes. It's a constant moving dot on a line. And right now, the culture is pointing more to the right. You are seeing more individuals speaking up and making their voice heard as it relates to UNC, to diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. You've got these individuals that have been in these positions, were reallocated, were pushed into different posts, pushed into different positions because the DEI office got all of its funding stripped, but they're continuing to push the narrative. They're continuing to push the agenda. So the consequence for breaking the rules, knowingly admitting that you're doing that, is losing your job. And that's exactly what happened, according to details from UNC Asheville. They put out that statement that I just read. They do not support the policy. And with that, they have decided that the solution is that for this individual, she's losing her job. Very similar to what you saw out of UNC Charlotte. And it's a bold move for these schools. I'm glad they're doing it, but genuinely, I'm surprised that they are. I'm genuinely surprised that these positions are being terminated and as quickly as they are. I would have expected that the schools would try and push this under the rug, that schools would try and find a way to claim that these videos are out of context, that these recordings don't indicate the full story. But the school system's been very quick. And to their credit, they have been. Now, again, they can see the changing tide. They are aware with what's going on at both the national and state level. They've seen the executive orders come out of the White House. They've seen the policy decisions changes out of the Board of Trustees. And the reality is the grift is over, at least for right now. Does that mean it's permanently done? No, I don't think so. These things ebb and flow, right? What is very unpopular right now could be very popular 5 years down the road. But for the time being, DEI is on the out. And I'm very satisfied that that's the case. I think these policies are inherently discriminatory. These policies create an incredible amount of division and divisiveness within groups of peoples for seemingly no reason. I mean, for absolutely no reason, but for the fact that liberals can pat themselves on the back and say, good job. We did DEI. We beat the man. We did our DEI thing. We did our implicit bias training. We held our moment of silence for victims of white supremacist violence, whatever the hell that means. So they can pat themselves on the back, talk about to their friends about how great of a liberal they are and how good they are in pushing all of these agendas and policies forward. And that's where we are. That's where things stand right now. The tide is, in fact, changing. And if you want to be in the UNC school, UNC system, if you're going to be a professor or a dean of students or the head of a department, and you're going to knowingly break the rules, admit to doing so. Talk about doing things in a covert, under the radar, secret nature, and it's exposed, you're going to be fired. That's the standard that has been set. And presumably, at least according to accuracy in media, there's at least a few more of these coming. Potentially 4 to 5 more of these videos coming out over the presumably the next couple of weeks. What exactly those are going to feature, what the reactions are going to be, remains to be seen. But the standard has been set in Charlotte. The standard has now been set in Asheville. And it's going to be very interesting to see not only how the additional schools respond if, in fact, these accuracy and media reports do come out, but what does the UNC system board of trustees do? Because they're kind of in a tough spot. And I mentioned this when we talked about the story in Charlotte last week. It is impossible for them to enforce something like the DEI thing. Now, yes, they can enforce it. They can make sure that the DEI departments are gone. Absolutely. But how do you make sure that the teachings still don't continue? How do you make sure that radical progressives that were once in those DEI positions are not continuing their progress, not continuing their efforts in a different vein? That's the problem that the UNC Board of Governors has. And there's no really great solution. It takes these undercover reports. It takes somebody blowing the whistle for any of this stuff to come out. Because they'll never admit to it publicly. They will not put it in writing. They will do their best to masquerade it into other departments and find ways to rename it. You really have to dig deep to find this stuff out. And in some cases, you really have to read between the lines to figure out exactly what is happening. It's a very tough problem for them to solve. There is no silver bullet. There is no one-size-fits-all solution to it. But it's going to be interesting if there's, in fact, more of these videos that exist, how the Board of Governors handles this in the weeks and months going forward. They've already set the policy. I'm not sure what more they can do, but I can imagine it will probably be a pretty significant piece of discussion when they meet next time. They have a meeting. They meet every couple of months or so. So I can imagine at their next regularly scheduled board meeting, there will probably be some pretty substantial discussion on this. You know, this is, once again, like the Charlotte story. It's making national news. There's a Fox News story on it. Accuracy in Media is a pretty well-known group. And now I guess you just kind of wait and see and watch how this process unfolds. We'll have a full link to this in our show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. You can also get all of the details at AIM.org, Accuracy in Media, AIM.org. We've got a lot more to get into on this Wednesday morning, but before that, when legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across Eastern North Carolina. Whether you're in a situation where you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you need a strong defense, the law group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, they're located in downtown Wilmington and just a free phone call away at 910-251-6088. Or you can visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. I used the Law Group back almost 5 years ago to purchase my house and go through my real estate transaction. Phenomenal experience with them. Give the Law Group a call today, 910-251-6088. On the other side, there is some controversy brewing as Elon Musk is calling out President Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill. We'll have details on that as the Nick Craig Show continues live on a Wednesday morning, YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Good Wednesday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show. Thanks for spending some time with us. Obviously, a lot of discussion going on in Washington, D.C. over the last couple of weeks over the big, beautiful bill. Many fiscal hawks, many conservatives continue to point to the fact that the bill does not cut enough. It continues to raise the debt ceiling, and it is squaring off what is said to be a major battle between the United States House and Senate and putting the White House in a very precarious spot. Elon Musk, who for the last 100-plus days spent his time as a special advisor to President Donald Trump, leading the charge in the Department of Government Efficiency, stepped back last week. His time, I think it was 130 days, 140 days, is the length of time that a special government employee is allowed to operate. He has now stepped back from the federal government. DOGE, the entity, does still continue, but Elon Musk is no longer at the helm. Musk really voicing his concerns yesterday, putting out a post yesterday afternoon on X, his social media platform, that reads as follows. I'm sorry, but I just can't stand it anymore. This massive, outrageous, pork-filled congressional spending bill is a disgusting abomination. Shame on those who voted for it. You know what you did wrong. You know it. And that is the commentary from Elon Musk, very strongly worded as it relates to this spending bill that does continue to beg a lot of questions. You know, we've watched the work that has gone on with DOGE over the last couple of months. We have watched the efforts that have been taken by Musk and his team to try and get the government back on track. We have watched the attempts be made, and it's been incredibly frustrating for many folks as they have seen, especially, you know, and I'm going to call out the president because he's the one who is leading the charge on this big, beautiful bill, who does not seem to be taking some of these cuts seriously. I mean, you look at the U.S. debt clock, it's very obvious that we're sitting in a major problem right now. We're $36.9 trillion in debt, and it continues to go up every single second. You're looking at a debt of over $323,000 $1,000 per taxpayer on the national debt. It's an absurd amount of money, and it's unfortunate that members in Congress are not taking this more seriously. It's unfortunate that all of this work has gone on, and we are still in a position where there are serious questions about whether any actual cuts are going to happen. And I get it. It's not easy. And we spent all yesterday's show talking about cutting the county government, talking about finding waste in a $500 million New Hanover County budget and how it's not easy. And you've really got to sharpen your pencil and really get down to brass tacks with it. But it's something that's important. It's something that needs to continue. The plan that we are on right now is completely unsustainable. You can talk to anybody, whether it's a Democrat, a Republican, a conservative, a liberal. Our amount of spending is unsustainable. You can't borrow money indefinitely. There comes a point where nobody will let you borrow any more money. There becomes a point where there is not, you can't issue any more loans. There's no more bonds to issue. There's nobody else to buy them. That is the train wreck that we are watching unfold in front of our very eyes. The United States government, I hate to say it, but both Republicans and Democrats are not serious about the cuts. Republicans and Democrats are not serious about making these changes. Because it's hard. Because cutting government spending isn't easy. And nobody wants to take the hard road, especially in Congress. They've got very controversial midterm elections coming up next year, and I guess their solution is to bury their head in the sand and just hope that the problem goes away. Now, you and I both know that that's not going to happen. You and I both know that if we continue on this track, we are looking at what is very obvious, eventual financial ruin for the United States of America. You cannot keep up this amount of spending. You cannot keep up this amount of government bloat and waste and have a sustainable country long term. Now, do I think that tomorrow the United States is going to collapse? No. We're the most prosperous, we're the freest, and we're the most influential and important nation in the world. There's no argument about that. But you've got a simple economics problem now that is right in front of us. You've got a simple math equation that is in front of you as it relates to government spending and government waste. The budget is too much. There is too much garbage included in the federal budget. And when you've got somebody like Elon Musk, who I would at this point call a subject matter expert on the issue, he has spent the last 100 plus days going through Doge, going through various systems within the federal government and finding the most absurd, ridiculous things that you can imagine. When he's calling that out, that is something that I am going to read. That is something that I'm going to put some stock into. Right? When you look at somebody like Elon Musk, who has absolutely grown as a controversial figure, right? Once the poster boy and the darling of the left, is now the devil reincarnate. He's the worst guy that's ever existed. But cutting the federal budget, cutting federal spending, does him no benefit. Yeah, right. When you look at somebody like Elon Musk, sure, you could argue that he's got some sort of ulterior motive, but he doesn't benefit from the federal government saving money. He doesn't benefit from the federal government and them reducing their policy of deficit spending. Right. He doesn't make good on that. He doesn't get to go to his voters because he's not an elected official. He doesn't get to go to his voters and say, I saved this, that, and the other. Right? It's a zero-sum game for him. And so when you've got an outside influence and an outside source like Elon Musk that is calling out this bill, saying that it is bloated, saying that it is massive, outrageous, and pork-filled, calling it an abomination, that's something that causes my radar to go up. Mike Johnson was asked about this yesterday afternoon. As you can imagine, he did not have the same feelings that the Tesla and ex-CEO has.
Yeah, let me say this. It's very disappointing, okay? I've come to consider Elon a good friend. He's obviously a very intelligent person, and he's done a lot of great work. With all due respect, my friend Elon is terribly wrong about the one big beautiful bill.
He's terribly wrong, according to Mike Johnson, about the big beautiful bill. Terribly wrong. However, it's hard for me to trust what Mike Johnson is saying. It's hard for me to listen to those comments having read about the budget, having read about some of the stuff in the big, beautiful bill that is being pushed, again, by President Donald Trump. It's hard for me to listen to Mike Johnson's comments and give them really any significant weight. Because if you look at what's going on, if you look at what is in the legislation, it's a problem. If you look at the same kind of garbage that is in there, it still exists. Are there some changes? Absolutely. Are there some savings and some cuts that are in the big, beautiful bill? Sure. But it doesn't go anywhere near as far as it should. Republicans, aka the GOP, have what I will argue a once in a lifetime opportunity right now. The momentum, the wins, everything is pushing in the direction of the GOP right now. That doesn't happen very often in politics. You have an American populace that found themselves very frustrated with a vast majority of what came out of the previous Democrat administration. They gave Republicans the White House. They gave Republicans the House and the Senate. They have an opportunity right now to what, and I don't think I'm being dramatic with this, but honestly, change the course of government. You don't get that opportunity very often. Now, you can hack away at little pieces here and there, sure. Well, obviously, Congress is always doing this, that, or the other. But you don't get many opportunities to make wholesale changes to how government operates. You don't get many of those chances. You don't get many of those shots. They've got that ability right now, and it appears that they are getting ready to fumble the ball. And it's unfortunately being led by Trump. He is the one that is championing this legislation. He is the one that is not demanding that the House, who passed this bill, he was not demanding that the House find more cuts. Now, in all likelihood, there's a very strong possibility that this doesn't pass the U.S. Senate. And that's going to be a disaster for Trump. You've already had multiple senators come out and say that they will not support this legislation. You've had multiple fiscal hawks in the Senate come out and say, there's not a chance in hell we're going to vote for this thing. We have got to make more substantial cuts. But even with that, the White House is staying true to its message. White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt was asked earlier this week whether Musk's criticism affects President Donald Trump's attitude towards the bill, given Musk's previous status as an advisor to President Trump, a special government employee. And she said, quote, look, the president already knows where Elon Musk stood on the bill. It doesn't change the president's opinion. This one big, beautiful bill, and he's sticking to it. And so I guess that's what's happening. Now, I understand that things don't happen very rapidly in Congress. I'm not ignorant to the fact that wholesale change doesn't happen immediately. But the Republicans have a very small political window right now where they can get a lot done. They have got a position right now where they can not only handle government spending, which is the problem, and also deal with the deficit. Deficit spending is how the United States has operated for at least the last 30 years, for the most part. Deficit spending, you are spending more money than you are collecting, right? You deal with this in your personal budget, your personal finances every month. You make $1,000 a month. That's the most that you can spend. If you spend more than $1,000 a month, well, then you have to borrow that money. You either have to have a loan or a credit card or something to put that money on because you only made $1,000 last month, right? That's the most amount of money that you made. So that's the most that you can spend without borrowing, the federal government continues to borrow trillions of dollars. The federal budget continues to balloon at a rapid rate. And I don't know what this, I don't know what the game plan is right now. I think President Trump is serious about, I think the president's serious about government spending. It's obvious that he's serious about Doge and serious about government cuts. He would not have brought somebody like Elon Musk so close to him. He would not have brought him into his inner circle if he wasn't serious about it. And so it's very interesting that this is unfolding the way that it is, because not Trump's not acting two-faced on it. I don't think that's the case, but he just doesn't seem to be taking it as serious as some other folks. I mean, not only does this bill add trillions of dollars to the deficit, but it doesn't make substantial cuts that have been discussed now for months. And you've heard the president echo some of these. You had his joint address to Congress earlier this year where he spent 30 minutes going through all of the various waste and nonsense from USAID and all of these other programs that was being cut out of the budget. So he appears serious about it. He appears that he wants to do it. And I don't really understand why this is going on. Trump is obviously probably not happy with what Elon Musk is saying. Trump is a big loyalty guy. So I would imagine that that relationship is probably going to be not destroyed, but there's probably going to be some tension within that relationship going forward, because Trump is putting all of his chips, he's all in on this big, beautiful bill. He is putting it all out on the table for this legislation. And if it's unsuccessful, if multiple Senate Republicans, who we've already heard from a couple, stonewall this effort and block this from moving forward, it is going to be a major loss, a huge political blow to President Donald Trump. And when you've got, you know, people like Rand Paul and Thomas Massey and other folks that have continued to call this stuff out, it's going to be very interesting, you know, what we see. Here is the Senate leader in John Thune. He is the Republican majority leader in the United States Senate. He was asked about these comments yesterday, just like Mike Johnson. This is what he had to say.
You criticize the Democrats saying they're going to fight against this with everything they've got. That doesn't seem to be your problem. Elon Musk seems to be your problem. Absolutely torching this bill here, saying everybody who voted for that should be ashamed.
Well, look, we obviously respect everything that Elon did with Doge. On this particular issue, we have a difference of opinion. And I think it's rooted in the fact that he's accepting the CBO assumptions that are built upon a static scoring assessment of the effect, the macroeconomic effect, growth effect, that these changes will have on our economy. And all the modeling that we've seen suggests that the changes that are being made in the tax policy, particularly making permanent bonus depreciation, interest deductibility, R&D expensing, are going to lead to significant growth. And you couple the growth with the biggest spending reduction in American history, and you will see a reduction, not an increase in the deficit. So we have a difference of opinion. He's entitled to that opinion. We're going to proceed full speed ahead.
Now, the point there that is being made by John Thune is not inaccurate. Members of Congress are of the mindset that because of some of the tax change policies and stuff, the United States is going to be able to generate significantly more revenue than the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, is predicting. That's fine. Here in North Carolina, we struggle with the same thing. Some of these projected incomes, these projected increases in taxes and rates for the government to take in, that absolutely has the ability to be wrong. There's no argument on that. However, that I think is only a small part of the criticism that Elon Musk is making. I don't think the crux of his argument is the United States is going to be taking in less money. Looking at his postings and looking at some of the commentary that he's made over the last couple of days, his concern is the cuts, Not that revenue forecasts will be down or up. It's that there's not enough cuts in this budget. There's not enough spending reductions in this budget. And boy, does this really put Republicans in Congress in a tough position, right? You've got people that are very frustrated on the right, the folks that agree with Elon Musk. But then on the other hand, you've got President Donald Trump, who is leading the charge on this legislation. That is a real political dichotomy. That is a very precarious position for many, many people to be in, right? When you've got the president of the United States, who we know has the ability, that we know has the influence and the power to change minds on Capitol Hill, has the ability to whip votes to agree with whatever agenda he is trying to push, when you've got him advocating for the legislation, when you've got Elon Musk and what I will call a lot of the grassroots advocating against it, that's an interesting push. The reality of it is probably this, though, and don't shoot the messenger. Here's the reality. President Trump is behind this legislation. Republicans in Congress will support it. It will go to Trump's desk and it will be signed. Is it a disaster? No, I don't think so. Is it an abomination, like Elon Musk says? I don't know that I would go that far. Is it good? Is it a good start? I think so. Is it something to build on? Yes, absolutely. But you've got a problem right now. You've got a ticking clock to November of 2026, in which Republicans, in all likelihood, will still not control the White House, the House, and the Senate. Trump will still be in the White House. There's now no real debate on that. But there is a very strong possibility that Republicans lose their majorities in the House and potentially the Senate in 2026. There is a strong possibility just based on some of the political math that's out there and the fact that it's a midterm election, which almost always favors the party that is not in power. So that would, of course, be the Democrats at this point. So you've got a ticking time bomb of a November election next year in which nothing will move forward, right? The Democrats, if they gain control in just one chamber, are not going to support any sort of significant cuts to government. They will not support any sort of DOGE-related cuts in the budget. It's just not going to happen. You can guarantee that. There's not a really a gray area there at all. So is this bill a disaster? No, I don't think so. Is it as bad as Elon Musk is describing? No, I don't think so. But Elon Musk sees the opportunity that's available to Republicans right now and wants them to strike while the iron's hot, to use the political leverage and the political advantage that they have right now to make significant change. Why the president isn't of that same mindset, I wish I had an answer for you. I wish I could telepathically explain to you why the president is of the mindset that this is good legislation and he needs to die on this sword. I don't know. I don't know why he's pushing this bill that doesn't go far enough. You know, Trump is lashed out on people like Senator Rand Paul and others that have continued to bring up these criticisms. He hasn't spoken about, he hasn't publicly spoken about Elon Musk yet. I can imagine in the next couple of days, if the president is speaking publicly or maybe a Truth Social post hammering Musk a little bit, I would not be surprised to see that come forward because Trump doesn't like when people dissent. Trump doesn't like when people speak up and go against things that he's pushing. That's just the kind of guy that he is, whether that's good or bad or indifferent. It's kind of irrelevant. So the House passed it right before Memorial Day weekend. So now it will be making its way over to the United States Senate. And the question is going to be, can President Trump use his influence and his power to force the Senate to pass this? Or is there enough dissension within the United States Senate? Are there enough senators that are of the mindset that this bill doesn't go far enough and they spike the football. Now, I will say this as it relates to politics, and this is not going to be a popular opinion, but I'm just going to say it. I feel the need to bring this opinion and point of view to you. You don't always get what you want in politics. That's just a matter of governance, right? We don't have a king, right? We don't have one authoritarian ruler that just gets to decide how everything happens. We have three equal branches of government. On the legislative side, you've got two branches, a House and a Senate, and then an executive branch that signs off on legislation. That is how our system is made up. And so even though this bill does not go far enough, the question is, and I assume this is what many senators are going to be asking themselves over the next couple of weeks, the question is, does this bill do more good than bad? Does this legislation provide more wins than losses? As it's written right now, I think it's pretty close, but I would probably fall on the side of there's more good in this bill than bad. There's plenty of things that can be changed. There's plenty of ways it can be improved, absolutely. But overall, does this bill do more good than bad? I think the answer to that question, at least as of right now, is yes. And with that being the case, I would suspect that that is probably going to be some of the arguments that the president and other folks, John Thune and the majority whip and various folks in the Senate, are going to be trying to lay out to their colleagues, right? Their other members on the Republican side of the aisle in the United States Senate. Trump has sold this bill. He has promoted this big, beautiful bill since before he was even inaugurated, talking about how he was going to do this in one piece of legislation. And who knows? You know, maybe this looks a little bit worse on paper than it will in practicality. I would just suspect, with the president being so strong behind this, with the House and Senate for the most part being unified on it, Mike Johnson's in favor of it, John Thune's in favor of it, which should be a little skeptical right there anyway. But nevertheless, I would suspect that this probably moves forward. Whether you think that's right or wrong is kind of irrelevant to the discussion. So I've kind of held off on talking about the legislation because things are not cemented in stone. There is an opportunity for the Senate to make amendments if they want to do that. So I just haven't really bothered to dig into it yet. I've been keeping up with it, but I haven't done a full-on discussion yet because there's still a rather large amount of uncertainty as it relates to it going forward. It has passed the House. It's in the Senate. We're seeing some dissension. Elon Musk, Rand Paul, some other folks, and the president, according to Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt yesterday, is full steam ahead with this thing. So we'll have to continue to watch and see, and encourage you, if you've got any thoughts on the big, beautiful bill, some of the comments from Musk, you think he's in the right or in the wrong, you can, of course, always leave a comment on our YouTube channel. You can leave a comment on the social media as well if you want to comment on that as well. Looking at some of our comments from yesterday's show, of course, the big discussion being the major property tax increase across North Carolina. Cindy commenting on our YouTube feed yesterday saying, quote, such a smart way to simplify this drastic budget increase. Tom's comments echo many of my neighbors' fears. How can commissioners not even see a budget neutral and feel good about displacing elderly residents on a fixed income? And the smoke and mirror of the employees presenting the $8 million loan is unacceptable. Thanks for the comment, and appreciate you checking out the show, Cindy. Greatly appreciated that comment coming in on our YouTube channel over at youtube.com/ The Nick Craig Show. Don't forget that you can support the show financially if you believe that you are getting some value and you want to come alongside and support the show. Get access to daily show notes and more. Head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. Once again, thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. That's going to do it for a Wednesday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts.